Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
Welcome to the Service Dog Show. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, also known as PTS Dog.
And I'm your host, Scav.
I want to let the audience know, you know, Scav and I, we've worked together. We share information back and forth.
I run Scout as my service dog. He's a hearing dog, PTSD dog.
We're here to bring you news, interviews, and information about service dogs and about matters that are of interest to the service dog community.
Thank you for joining us on the Service Dog Show on DV Radio, WDVR.
Welcome to the Service Dog Show. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, also known as PTS Dog.
And I'm your host, Scav.
With us tonight in part two of our Reasonable Accommodation series of programs is DV Nightmare, who has recently gone through the reasonable accommodation process with his employer. As we discussed last week, Scav also had to go through the process of requesting reasonable accommodation. Now, last week we talked about when to request reasonable accommodation. When do you tell your potential employer that you have a service dog? And the consensus was throughout the entire application process. Don't hide anything. Don't spring anything on them. Be upfront about the fact that you are disabled, that you do use a service dog, and that you would like to request reasonable accommodations as you're applying for employment. The reason being, as we discussed with Nevermore and Scav last week, is you spring something on them, they can turn around and tell you no, because you lied throughout the entire application process. So if you lied about it while you were applying, how can the employer trust you not to lie about important things like, you know, what's going on with your job? So Nightmare, thank you very much for joining us. For a little bit of background for the folks who are listening, where do you work?
I'm a building equipment mechanic for the United States Postal Service.
Ouch.
So, disabled veteran. Now you worked for the Postal Service. You were already working for the Postal Service when you got to the point where you decided you needed a service dog. Is that correct?
Correct. I worked for them for 10 years prior. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I was kicking around, as you know, JJ, for about probably close to 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I finally pulled the trigger and decided that this was the best route for me. Mm-hmm. And I actually started asking the post office questions. What do you need for reasonable accommodations? Next thing you know, I was getting a letter in the mail.
Oh, so okay.
I didn't even formally, you know, put in writing that I was requesting reasonable accommodations. They just, I guess, through hearsay, reacted to my inquiry as to what is the process.
All right. Folks, you got to understand something. Nightmare is on a whole different level. He's federal. I mean, he's getting bent over a desk big time. All he did was mention something, and the government is on him. Go ahead, buddy.
Wait. So you asked, you know, you said, what do you need? And a letter shows up. Scav, for you, because you were already working for the company, what was the process when you asked?
I went in and just established communications with HR. You know, and I've got a little bit of feedback, and I got a little bit of resistance from the executive committee. Mm-hmm. I didn't get any resistance from HR, but you know, this is a privately owned family business,
right?
And it's not really a family business anymore. It's grown, and we all over the East Coast, pretty much the northern quarter of the United States. But
okay, to back up a little bit. When I first got back from vacation after looking at a cooperative education program, cooperative training program, and when I made my final decision, I went back to my supervisor and I told him that, look, I'm getting a service dog and I'd like to know, you know, what the course of action is. Later on that day, I went in to see the overall maintenance manager of the plan for another topic all on its own. After we finished discussing that, so he opens up the conversation with, "What's this shit I hear? You want to bring an effing dog to work?"
Oh, wow. Yeah. So
that's how it started, you know.
So it was already adverse.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
100% adverse. And it was that way really until I gave the presentation at my reasonable accommodations hearing. I got a lot of flack in little, you know, just stupid bullshit. That same, I can't prove it because it was all sneakily done. But that same manager was making like barking noises up until the, when I'd be passing by his office or whatever, you know, doing silly, stupid stuff like you expect in high school.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And you're not the only one that that I know that works for the post office that I'm hearing, you know, horror stories like this. But one of my admins works for, and I don't know how you guys put up with it, man. It's just, it's like in grade school.
I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a disabled veteran.
Right.
It would take Congress to get me out of there.
Yeah.
I don't put up with their crap at all. I put them, just like I talk to anybody, I show people the same respect they show me.
Right.
I don't care who they are at all.
Yeah. I mean, like some of the stories he tells me, I'm not going to mention his name, like I said, because he's part of my page, but it's just like being in school with the way some of these, you know, superiors talk to him.
You can't make it up.
No.
You can't make it up.
So you were already in an adverse environment. We get through all the initial resistance and the initial, you know, curiosity or whatever. So the next step is there is some kind of paperwork or something. There's something that has to be written down, correct?
Correct. Now, okay. For me, and what I would suggest to anybody that's considering this path for your treatment plan is to absolutely, before you get your dog, wholeheartedly learn all aspects of any of the laws concerning service dogs, to include FHA, ADA, ACAA, all of it, and become versed with it, because that's what helped me. Being versed in the law is what helped me get the accommodations at the speed that I did.
Okay.
When I presented, I'll mention a website because Positivity is where I got some information about, they explained what a service dog for PTSD can do.
Uh-huh.
And in very layman's terms. So I presented that in amongst a bunch of other information about service animals and the use of service animals for PTSD and other psychiatric conditions. Now, we haven't had a chance to really talk about this too much, JJ, but one of the things that cooperative training programs are now doing is they're no longer calling their dogs PTS dogs.
Right.
They're calling their dogs medical alert dogs because, in essence, that's exactly what they are.
Yeah.
It's moving away from the stigma that's connected to PTSD.
Mm-hmm. Well, part of the reason I haven't changed the name of the page or anything I do to medical alert dog is because of destigmatization. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, yeah, but I understand why they're doing it, because you're right. A PTSD service dog is a medical alert dog. We're talking about changes in your biochemical makeup, in your brain chemicals, when you're having issues, PTSD incidents, whatever you want to call it. You know, your body starts dumping dopamine, cortisol, the stress hormone, and adrenaline, and that changes the way you smell, and the dog picks up on that and alerts to it.
Right.
So, it makes sense that they're doing that, and I don't have a problem with that. I understand why. I'm sticking to my guns simply because we still are fighting the destigmatization battle.
Oh, absolutely.
But
absolutely.
We are digressing.
No, I understand. But no, the reason I brought that up is because people tend to have less of a stigma with that, as we all know. And if it was me going to do this again, I would have reworded it to accommodate those words.
Okay, so you would request accommodation for a medical alert service dog.
Right. Okay. Now, in the paperwork that I got from the post office, it does ask for your disability. So I would be divulging that anyway. I don't personally have a problem doing that, you know, to certain people that warrant that information, but other people do, you know.
Yeah, but under Title I, in order to understand why they need to accommodate you, they need to know, the HR or part of the organization needs to know that.
Right.
They have to make a consideration as to whether or not there are other ways you can be accommodated.
Correct. And they need all the information to make a valid judgment. Right. And I agree with that 100%. It's one of the reasons why I didn't have an issue with it. It was very shocking initially to me, and I did look into it, you know, because it did seem rather invasive, because they wanted to know how my disability affected me not only at work but at home, what are some of the treatment plans that I've tried before, and you know, just various things that I really didn't think that was within their purview. But after speaking with the EEOC, you know, I learned quite a lot. So they can basically ask you anything as long as it pertains to your disability. And if you do not answer any of those questions, that right there in and of itself is grounds for, you know, denial.
Yeah. Okay. Some of those questions could be very intrusive.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So to clarify, they can ask specifically for medical evidence and records about your disability, not your whole medical record, just the disability that you're requesting to use the service dog as an accommodation for, correct?
No, they cannot ask for medical records. They can ask for statements from a doctor.
That is an important clarification. You, your experience is the same, Scav?
Correct.
Okay, so they cannot ask for your medical records.
Correct.
Documentation. So, in other words, an accommodation letter from your psychiatrist, say.
As a matter of fact, when I went in and presented all this, I only took statements for the particular issues that Scout was going to be helping me with.
Okay. Okay. This is information that people don't have.
Right. It's a HIPAA violation to release any medical records to non-medical personnel.
Okay. Okay. So if, now just, I'm just throwing this out there because it could happen. Say you have a company doctor.
Fine line. It would have to be in the same, he would have to have a doctorate in the same discipline as your disability in order for
Okay. Okay. I'm just, like I said, you know, I'm learning too, because this is, you know, Nightmares, for anybody in the audience who doesn't know, Nightmares, one of my admins at PBS Dog Page, and I literally hired him specifically because he had just gone through this reasonable accommodation process with the U.S. Postal Service. So this man has, within the last 6 months, 8 months?
It started April 26th, and I got full accommodations on July 17th.
Okay, so within the last 6 months, gone through the mill with the Postal Service in order to gain reasonable accommodations. This is in-person experience, folks. The man fought the system and won. And it wasn't really necessarily fighting the system as much as it was learning how to use the system in order to gain what you
need. Right. Now, with the Postal Service, as you know, JJ, I do my homework. Mm-hmm. And I learned through various different Facebook groups that the Postal Service had already allowed 17 service dogs as well as 19 ESAs.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, ESAs do not have public access.
Really? They allowed the ESAs.
They allowed ESAs on postal property. Now, here's the kicker. They allowed ESAs on postal property that interact with the public.
Really?
So, yes. So I knew this going into that first meeting. So I knew that they didn't have a leg to stand on. And I knew ultimately that I was going to win. It was just a matter of how much grief they were going to put me through before we got it. But
process.
Right.
I mean, unfortunately, there's process involved in every phase with service dogs, including getting reasonable accommodation for employment. There's a process.
Absolutely.
So you filled out the paperwork, you submitted it. How'd that go? Give me a timeline.
Well, I got the initial letter, I think it was the 3rd of April, and I had 15 days to reply back. Well, they would consider my request moot. They would just dismiss it.
Right. So
immediately, I luckily I had a doctor's appointment, my therapist appointment the next day. I had to write a letter. We actually sat down. Now, and I think you're going to find this with a lot of different corporations. More often than not, reasonable accommodations are asked for a temporary condition where an employee can only perform their duties to a restricted small time frame, like after a surgery or after an accident. They can't lift, you know, X amount pounds over their head. Mm-hmm. They can only stand for so long, yada, yada.
Okay. Almost like a light duty.
Right. And now a lot of the corporate paperwork is geared towards that. Doesn't really surprise me, but there was no place on those forms that I got from the Postal Service that asked the doctor what their suggestion for a reasonable accommodation was. Mm-hmm. So we didn't provide that. We answered the questions that were presented in the paperwork to the T. Mm-hmm. I had a letter from my therapist explaining that the dog was going to be the best part of my treatment plan going forward, because I've already exhausted other avenues that didn't work. Mm-hmm. So this was the plan that we chose.
I think that's an important point you just brought up, is that now, remember, we're talking about you already have the job. We're not talking about asking for reasonable accommodation as you're applying. So you have already had the job for 10 years. You've exhausted all other treatment options. You know, you've gone through this kind of treatment and these medications and counseling and yada, yada. Okay. So at this point, you're saying to the company, look, I've done everything I can. Nothing's getting better. The last option I have is I'm going to try using a service dog. Remember, folks in the audience, this is not a cure. Service dogs do not cure PTSD or any other ailment, but it is a treatment that gives you the ability to start to deal with symptoms of your disability better, I guess is a very simplistic way to put it. You get to cope better. Nightmare, let me ask you, and if I push a button, tell me no. But were you having difficulty that may have included disciplinary issues?
Absolutely.
Okay, so they were aware.
I have a very low bullshit tolerance. Mm-hmm. And it's not a secret as to how I feel about anything.
Uh-huh.
And I have no problem telling people that either.
You know? So you know your HR guy pretty well too.
Well, they know me. But and they've learned to just give me a wide berth,
right?
Because they're stuck with me. Short of me killing somebody on their property or stealing. Well, mail. Right.
Yeah. I mean, you've got federal protections in place. You've got veterans preference plus. Right. Is there union or?
Yeah, there's a union, but like anything else, they can only do so much.
Right. But what I'm saying is you, in your position, have federal protections in place.
Yes.
Because it's federal employment. So, okay, so you fill out all the paperwork. You answer questions that you were like, holy cow, can they even ask me? And I remember you came to me to the patients and yeah. said, you know, can they ask me this? And I'm like, I don't know.
Right.
You figure it out. Let me know, dude.
Oh, and I did. yeah, I spent many, many hours waiting on the queue for EEOC and DOJ. And mm-hmm. I got to know a few of the people that supervisors at both places. So I now call them directly, which is awesome. But yeah, I learned a lot through the process, and most of what I dealt with was people's own personal stigmas, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. When I went into the meeting initially on the 26th of April, nobody knew what was going on. I was the first one, basically in the whole Northeast area, to bring a service dog into the building or into the postal service at all. Mm-hmm. So I knew there was going to be a learning curve going into it. Mm-hmm. And that's why I did my due diligence. And I had probably over 50 pages of research and packets made for the people that were on the board so that they could have a intelligent conversation.
Okay.
Now, unbeknownst to me, nobody on that committee got that information until really? the day of the hearing. So, right, yeah, welcome to my world. So, I go in there, and it came time to 9:30 rolls around, and they're all looking at me like, okay, what do we do now? So I said, well, I guess we'll start the meeting. My name's John Holzer. I'm here to ask, you know, reasonable accommodations for a service dog to treat my disability.
Mm-hmm.
And we went around the room and they introduced themselves and whatnot. And then they started asking questions, and they brought up the fact that my doctor did not recommend a service dog. I said, you're absolutely right. In the paperwork, she didn't, but in the letter, she did. Mm-hmm. And the reason why she didn't, you know, address it in the paperwork, because you didn't ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
So they all looked at me like I had three heads. What do you mean we didn't ask for it? I said, you show me where on that piece of paper where it says, you know, asking the doctor for what they think reasonable accommodations for your disability is. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't one. So we then went into a 3.5 hour back and forth questions about not only the use of a service dog, but the path that I had chosen, which was the cooperative training program,
mm-hmm.
and the importance of having a first bond with the dog. For me personally, I intend to use my service dog not only as my service dog, but for educational purposes and promoting the use of service dogs and basically teaching service dog etiquette mm-hmm. to the children as young as possible, into elementary schools and whatnot.
Right.
So I had also had an issue with, I didn't want to impose my disability on anybody else. So I wanted a dog that was hypoallergenic. I wanted a dog that was non-threatening.
Mm-hmm.
For many, many reasons. You know, my biggest thing is that I have a high allergy to cats. And I know it would absolutely torment me to sit next to a cat on a plane.
Right.
And I just couldn't do that to somebody that had an allergy to dogs. You know, I just couldn't make my disability somebody else's problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I'm using a service animal, my next dog may be Cujo. So
for real, right?
He's just like, fuck everybody else, we're done with it.
It's a little trying at times, but you know, I've discovered that some of the best conversations I've ever had were with perfect strangers, because Skeeter was sitting next to me.
Right.
Last night, Nevermore and I were at a concert, and I had to sit out in the patio on the back deck of the venue because of the volume of the we went and saw the Who, which is a Mongolian metal band, and they do this throat singing. And although their volume levels were at the same volume as the opening band, which Skeeter was fine with, the whatever the timbre or pitch of the throat singing is, he was hopping around like a cat on a hot tin roof. Like, it hurt him. So we went outside. And so we're sitting there listening through the door, and we could hear the concert just fine without it being painful to him. But a gentleman came out and sat out there because it was hot in that venue. It was a little club, and let me tell you, it was like 95 degrees in there with all those bodies. But it was an Air Force veteran and a retired nurse. And he started asking questions about PTSD service dogs to me. So have you seen the meme on one of the service dog pages where somebody asks a question and the person's vomiting a rainbow and it says service dog laws in the rainbow? That was kind of last night. I was like, you know, wow. And I start talking, I mean, you know, you get an interested audience, and especially a fellow veteran and a medical professional on top of that. You know, so, I mean, it, public can be pretty invasive and pretty frustrating, but at the same time, some of the opportunities that the public's ignorance allows to arise are pretty damn cool, you know?
Oh, yeah. And, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, but we're digressing again. So while we're digressing, we're going to go to break in a minute. I want to remind you all that you're listening to The Service Dog Show right here on DV Radio, WDVR, and we do this free of charge. We do not charge you, the listener, or meet people like Scav and I who are recording and producing radio programs. DV Radio doesn't charge us to give you this content. However, it does cost DV Radio. So if you're able, please check out DV Radio's Patreon page. That's patreon.com/DV Radio, and help support this wonderful veteran-produced, veteran-provided content, which, again, it comes to you free of charge. Check us out on Patreon. That's the DV Radio Patreon page, patreon.com/DV Radio. We will be right back after this break.
DV Radio.
What's DV Radio?
DV Radio is for you, the veteran, active duty service member, caregiver, and civilian supporter of the military. DVRadio.net is the online veteran network made for and by veterans. From original shows to syndication, you can find it here on DVRadio.net. In an effort to continue our mission and make better quality shows for each and every one of you, visit our Patreon at patreon.com/DVRadio. Whether you can only pledge $1 per month or that entire $1 million inheritance your uncle left you, there's a tier with rewards waiting for you. So why not keep DV Radio running and get rewarded at the same time? Head to patreon.com/DVRadio now. That's patreon.com/DVRadio.
Radio.
Shooters Express is Charlotte's number one destination for all personal defense, sport, instruction, and recreational shooting supplies. They offer concealed carry classes for only $29.95. That's only $29.95 for concealed carry classes. And if you're military or law enforcement, you'll receive great deals and be eligible for even more at Shooters Express. So head over to Shooters Express in Belmont, North Carolina, or visit shootersexpress.com for more information and monthly deals. That's Shooters Express in Belmont, North Carolina.
This is not a paid endorsement from Shooters Express and is provided solely by DV Radio free of charge.
Nothing interesting on TV? That's why you're listening to DVRadio.net WDVR.
This ain't reality TV!
It's all there, black and white, clear as crystal!
It was at this moment that he knew he fucked up.
Oh, rude! Well, isn't that special?
Bloody, don't you think you should rephrase that?
Mama said that.
Good day, sir!
Now class is dismissed, gentlemen.
Welcome back to the Service Dog Show. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, also known as PTS Dog.
And I'm your host, Scav.
And we are here with DV Nightmare talking about requesting reasonable accommodation for employment after you already have the job. but I've gotten to the point where you decide you need a service dog. So you filled out all the paperwork and you sat down for this 3.5 hour long meeting. And how did that go?
The meeting went absolutely phenomenal from what my point of view that day. By the end of the meeting, everybody was on Team John, and I was actually quite shocked because there was 4 people in there that were extremely adamant against it prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, through my knowledge of the laws and knowledge of the training programs and knowledge of the use of the service animal, I was able to sway them all to my side. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the meeting, I asked them, okay, what do you need from me? And I was told, nothing. You satisfied all our questions. You know, just let us know when you're going to have the dog in, and we'll go from there. You'll have a 30 to 90 day, quote unquote, trial period, mm-hmm. and we'll go from there. So everything went fine from that meeting. And then afterwards, every week, I would go to the HR person, labor relations, and ask him, so, okay, I haven't gotten anything in writing. Now, at the end of the meeting, I also asked for the minutes of the meeting and a copy of the letter approving my accommodations.
Right.
Which I never got. Still. But. So every week I would go in there and ask him, hey, you know, you got that letter for me? You got those minutes? No, no, I haven't had a chance. I'll get to it. Now, this is all the way up until June 26th when I picked my dog up. Mm-hmm. The day I picked him up, I went in and talked to him again. No, 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 you're good to go. You know, but I'm glad I'm going to be on vacation when you come back. Now, part of that first meeting, they wanted me to take 10 days off. And thankfully, I had Wounded Warrior leave for the Postal Service, mm-hmm. where I was able to take leave that they gave me and basically take care of any of my disabilities. So I bonded with the dog for 10 days
mm-hmm.
on their dime, which was great. And I came back to work on July 9th. Now, prior to at that meeting, the same meeting, they wanted to put out information about service dog etiquette and whatnot. And I had provided them with numerous slides that we've all seen, the generic, you know,
yeah,
do not, you know, approach and yada, yada, yada.
Right.
And that hadn't been done. So me being the nice guy, the Friday prior to me supposed to be coming back to work, I called my supervisor and I said, hey, did you guys do the service talk yet? Which is service talk in postal ease is basically when they give like a safety briefing.
Right. Okay. Training.
Right. Yeah. And they wanted to make postings and whatnot, and that didn't happen. So
really.
Right.
Yeah. That's pretty huge, man, because I insisted that happened. There was a company email that I sat down and helped them write.
Oh, well, here's the other kicker. At that 3-hour meeting, that initial one, they actually asked me to be on the postal, to develop a program for the Postal Service nationally because of my knowledge and whatnot, to develop a program to where the next person would have a little bit easier.
Right.
Again, that never came to pass either.
Man. Yeah, because like you, on a Friday, we sent that email. That way, the following Monday, when we come in, people had time to, you know, absorb all this information.
Right.
You know, because basically it's the ADA. This is the do's and don'ts of when you see this dog Monday morning, this is what to do and what not to do.
Right.
And
so Friday, when I called my supervisor, he mentioned it to his boss. And while they were in a meeting that afternoon, the plant manager had evidently no knowledge that there was going to be a dog in there at all.
Oh, God.
Now, a little bit of background on him. He happens to be Indian, not American Indian, but
right. Indian.
Now, they don't like dogs.
Yes, they absolutely do not.
Okay.
Our customer base is a majority of Indian, and you should when we deal with them, they look down on Scout.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They consider him less than a rat.
Right.
They worship rats. They hate dogs. So he flips out because my manager brought up at the meeting that we haven't done this, and we told John that we were going to do this prior to him coming. He wigs out, flips out. My manager calls me Monday. Left. I didn't answer my phone because I was on leave and I didn't have to. And my supervisor called me. Now, my supervisor and I grew up together, so I answered the phone for him. He told me what was up. They were calling me to tell me not to come to work on Tuesday, the 9th, until, because I did not have reasonable accommodations. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You were at the meeting with me, you know?
Right.
Yeah. You know?
So he said, yes, but nobody, you don't have it in writing. I said, no, I don't. I said, but that's not my fault. And I said, well, do me a favor, Bob, call me back because I didn't get this phone call. So he says, okay. So he calls me back, leaves me a message. I show up to work the next morning. They tell me that I have to leave. I said, well, I'm not leaving. I said, you're going to have to call the inspectors and put me out. You know, because I'm not leaving of my own free will. I'm not clocking out. This was part of my treatment plan. This was, you know, I went through the process with you guys. Everybody knew everything all the way along. You know, I'm not backing off. So they restricted me. I was only allowed in one room and or outside because obviously now my dog at the time was only, he was 10 weeks old. Mm-hmm. So obviously he couldn't be left alone for an extended period of time or anything else.
Right.
You know, it had to be taken out and whatnot. So they let me, luckily the room that I was in had an outside door so we can go in and out as we needed and whatnot. But then they come back to me. So, well, we'll pay you for the day. I said, okay, that's great, but that's not good enough. And I'm still not clocking out. Mm-hmm. You know, I said, you're going to have to pay me until this is resolved. You know, this is not my doing. This is your doing. I don't know. And they tell me that, well, we're being told that you can't come in the building with the dog because you don't have accommodations. I say, okay, well, who is telling you this? Well, we don't know. I'm like, what do you mean you don't know? You know, how can you not know? Do you not know who's giving you that email or who's on the other end of that phone? You know, somebody's telling you this. You know, I need to know who. And they wouldn't tell me.
Mm-hmm.
So they agreed to pay me for the rest of that week. And I knew that I was going to get paid ultimately, you know, because it was a valid grievance.
Right.
It was just a matter of, you know, going through the hoops. Now, that, by dumb luck, actually triggered probably one of the worst stress events in my life. Because mm-hmm. here I was thinking that I had everything, you know, lined up. I'd done all my, you know, preliminary work and made this as seamless as possible. And now here it is. I don't know if they're going to, you know, I didn't know what they wanted and I didn't know who was asking,
you right. know,
because if they want, and I went through the process of explaining immunizations as far as the dogs and whatnot, because that was one of their concerns. And I explained that puppies are basically covered in vitro, you know, up until the age of 16 weeks, you know, I did all the research and, you know, explained everything to them. But I was concerned at that point that they were going to say that he couldn't come in without his immunizations.
Right.
Especially like the rabies, because that would be that I was out until he was 16 weeks old.
Right.
So with not knowing what they wanted and whatnot was, you know, as you can imagine, you know, flipping me the hell out. Mm-hmm. So it created a stress event. So I actually took advantage of that and taught Iggy how to, you know, taught him that, you know, this is what happens, you know. Mm-hmm. And he thankfully just, you know, took to it like nobody's business. So I was able to train him by the time I went to my second meeting to trigger and alert to my anxiety. Mm-hmm. So when I went back to this next meeting on the 17th of July, and they told me not to bring him, and I brought him anyway. Well, I did it for a couple of reasons. First of all, as we all know, the ADA says that the dog must be housebroken and must be under control.
Right.
My dog at that age already was. So I was going to prove to them that this dog is not going to be an issue. Mm-hmm. So we went back to the meeting, and I brought him in there. He laid down. I put him in a down stay. He didn't make another sound. Now, I was already triggered. So he rumbled a little bit, but then he, you know, he climbed up on my lap a little bit. And other than that, he didn't do anything. You didn't hear a word out of him, not a peep, which was awesome, you know. So it proved to them that, you know, it's not going to be a hindrance.
Right. Now, was this meeting the one where you had the DOJ representative observing?
Yes, both of them actually.
Okay.
Now, and he kept asking, you know, he actually at the second meeting asked, he says, okay, well, you mentioned that you had time to train the dog. He said, what did you train him for? I said, well, I started task training him only because the situation presented itself.
Mm-hmm.
And he took to it so quickly. He was already reacting. Now I just needed to teach him the steps. Now, Iggy's got 5 different levels of, I don't want to say, how do I say this? Like civil disobedience, so to speak.
Yeah.
If I don't start paying attention, his first alert is he'll sit on my foot.
Mm-hmm.
And if that doesn't work, he starts pouring at my leg. And if that doesn't work, he starts jumping up on me. And if that doesn't work, he starts barking.
Mm-hmm.
And if that doesn't work, he starts barking and jumping at me. Mm-hmm. So, and these were all things that he was already doing. I just taught him when to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if they hadn't played their stupid game, I wouldn't have had that opportunity. So their own stupidity gave me an absolute in. So at very early on in that second meeting, the DOG rep had asked me, you know, what task is he trained for? And I explained the task. And the other task is that he was trained for at that time was cover.
Mm-hmm.
So he basically declared right there in the meeting, he says, well, he says, John has a legitimate service dog. He has met the minimum qualifications of the ADA for a service dog. And then it was brought up about his age. This is nothing in the ADA says anything about age.
Yeah. Yeah.
It says that the dog must be under control, which obviously the dog is, and he brought it up. He says, because the dog is, you know, at the time he was 12 weeks old, and he was not making a sound. And it was over 2.5 hours that we were in there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the dog's obviously in control.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he was housebroken because he hadn't had an accident while he was in there. So, and we didn't have to go out for it, you know, so it all worked in my favor.
Yeah. Yeah. So this second meeting was in some ways, although the first meeting went well, ultimately they denied you. So this was kind of an appeal.
In essence, yes, it was a continuation of the first meeting.
Uh-huh.
The way that they worded it. And the reason for that was because the guy that was supposed to do his job didn't.
Okay. You know,
they were supposed to give me, they had 7 days from the time of that letter to give me their findings.
Right.
That didn't happen. There was 77 days between the meetings and I got bupkis.
Uh-huh.
You know, so and what, then they were asking, the thing that they asked me for was for his immunization record. So I provided that.
Uh-huh.
And, the vet evaluation, the initial evaluation.
From the health evaluation.
Right, health certificate, right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I had...
Not unreasonable. I mean, that's...
No, well, not that's, absolutely. Yeah.
That's a perfectly reasonable request, is make sure the dog has its shots and it's healthy.
Absolutely. Right.
Which the ADA absolutely requires that the dog has the shots and it's healthy.
Absolutely. Now, I was in a little bit strange situation because my dog was so young. Mm-hmm. So where I live, I couldn't even get a license until he was 6 months old.
Right.
You know, that's just, they don't issue.
That's just the way that works in your county or state. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I don't know why, but that's just the way it works.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was a little apprehensive as to going into the meeting, but they gave, you know, I didn't have any problems, you know, issues at all, providing any of the information that they wanted. I just needed to know what it was, you know?
Right. So, yeah. If you, you couldn't tell them.
Right.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it was probably one of the most stressful things that I've ever dealt with by far. And it was due to ineptness on their part,
mm-hmm.
Which you're going to find, especially if you're one of the first or the first one dealing with a corporation or a company and bringing it in. That's why I think it's so important to do your legwork and learn the laws before you get your dog.
Right. And you know, that's people like yourself and me and Joaquin being out here. I didn't want to set the example. I know you sure as hell didn't want to set the example, but if we didn't do it, how else is it going to get done?
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. I really don't give a shit if you know that Scout is a hearing dog or he's a PTSD dog, or, you know, a lot of people keep that stuff to themselves, you know, hip of this and hip of that. So it wasn't really a big deal for me to tell my HR guy.
But right.
When we were sitting in that meeting, you know, the owner of the company and the vice president of the company, they wanted to know what kind of service dog he was. And he was not going to release that information for anything, which told me instantly that I could trust this guy for anything I needed.
Mm-hmm.
So right. That made me working with him, you know, so much easier.
Yeah. Now for me in the process, I mean, it was, although the results were, couldn't have gone any better ultimately, you know, my whole journey was, you know, less than 180 days,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it was some very, very stressful times. And, you know, I think most veterans don't give their disabilities the justice that they deserve, meaning no. that we never think that we're as bad as we are.
No. And
yeah.
Yeah. We don't really consider ourselves disabled.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody says, well, you're disabled, I keep forgetting that I've got that label on me.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in these circles, you know, my term that, you know, I personally identify with a whole lot better is dysfunctional.
Right. Yeah. You, know. You call me fucked up or
right.
dysfunctional. Yeah. But disabled, I don't have that placard in my car.
Right. Right. You know, but, you know, we all look at things a little differently.
Right.
But it was very humbling, to say the least. The hardest thing was asking permission to treat my disability.
Yeah. And you. Yeah, right there.
That I think is probably what most people may be balking at when it comes to requesting reasonable accommodation, is that that's exactly what you're doing with a service dog, is asking permission to treat your disability.
Right.
And there are reasons why it works that way.
And if you're like John or myself that don't take authority real well,
and what do you mean?
And you basically got to get down on your knees and say please. It's kind of hard. You don't really want to do it, but it's a necessity.
Well, and ultimately, really, what it comes down to is, look, I, you know, one of the things that I tell people, one of the things that I say, and what I write on the page is that this is not the easy route. Using a service dog isn't the easy way. It is the hardest treatment. It is absolutely the hardest form of treatment because of things like, you know, having to do the self-learning and observation to understand, you know, why you need the dog to respond and to what the dog needs to respond.
Well,
and how, and you know, you have to do a lot of soul searching and learn a lot about yourself in order to figure out what it is you're teaching your dog and why.
Right.
Yeah, you do and you don't, though, JJ, because we are both of the same mindset, and Scab is also, from what I understand, from looking at his page and whatnot, following him and whatnot. But program dogs don't get that same benefit.
No, they don't, yeah. Because yeah, there's no bond with the handler.
Right.
While they're training. They don't have that bond. They don't get to pick up on that. You know, they don't get to pick up on what's going on with their handler as they're training.
Right.
Yeah. And
but
it's
the other huge thing, at least for me, is identifying those things, those triggers, and those behaviors in myself.
Yep.
I guess becoming more self-aware.
That's the hard part. That's why this isn't the easiest route to go.
Right.
And it does, and it's not easy to get employment or to, you know, make the choice while you are employed and ask for accommodation. It's just as hard. I mean, in your experience, John, it was just as difficult as making the decision, look, I've got to start training a service dog. This is not going to work unless I get some help, and the dog's the help, you know?
Right.
And I mean, that's just it. Is your health worth the trouble?
Well, obviously I think so.
And Scav too. I mean, yep. In my mind, yeah, my health's worth that trouble. It's worth the fight in order to make sure that I can heal.
Well, at least heal as best we can.
Well, yeah. I mean, and like I said, it's not a cure-all. It doesn't fix PTSD, but you get a whole lot better, and you get better, really. I mean, things start changing pretty quickly.
They do.
Yeah. They're and really. So it's, you know, but look, folks, the reason we're bringing this information to you and talking you through, this is the process that these gentlemen had to go through in order to get reasonable accommodation, permission to bring their service dog. Both of them were cooperatively trained, both Scout and Iggy, cooperatively trained. And so, you know, this is what they had to go through.
Now,
it's legal. It's legal for the companies to ask you these questions.
Yeah. And when I was training Scout, I didn't bring him to work. Like, I waited until we were completely done with the training on Tadsaw's end. And then a week before we got ready to graduate that program, I gave the company a heads up, hey, in 7 days, he's coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. And it was crunch time. Everybody was, you know, emails were getting out. The executive committee was meeting for the last time saying, what all do we gotta do? Because this dog's coming whether we want it to or not.
Right. With me, with getting Iggy so young, I didn't have the ability to leave him at home. I didn't have anybody to let him out. And, you know, housebreaking is a huge part of being a service dog, obviously.
Right.
So I couldn't. And I wasn't going to go backwards.
Right.
Now, I had already, and I laid this out to them and explained the process to them and why I chose it as opposed to getting a program dog and, you know, the whole nine yards. Iggy's got two crates at work in two different parts of the building. And I also use my car, my truck, as a mobile crate also.
Right.
And anytime during the day, I work in a postal plant, which is a very, very active environment. There's semi-trailers going in and out all day long. There's, you know, we have carts being pulled by motorized equipment, you know, all throughout the building. There's areas of the building and times of the day that are not conducive to have a dog in.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew this going in. You know, and I'm not going to put my dog, just like I'm sure none of us will put our dogs in danger.
Right.
If we can help it at all,
mm-hmm.
you know, so, and I knew that and I didn't have any issues with it. You know, my biggest thing was that in the beginning, initially, that was, I was able to maintain his housebreaking, if nothing else.
Right.
You know, that I could just go take him out and, you know, and he would be introduced into the environment little by little.
Mm-hmm.
Also
a loud environment with all the machinery.
Right. And I was blessed with Scout being young, and I had my daughter. It was during the summer, so she was home, and she was being trained as my secondary handler. So on clockwork, she was taking him outside and able to cover me that way while I was at work.
Right, yeah. See, my youngest is serving in the Air Force right now, so that wasn't an option.
Oh, man. So you're basically old as hell.
Hey, you know, payback's hell, JJ.
Yeah, I know. I deserve it. It's not a veteran, you know, there's not veteran guests on a veteran show if we don't rib each other a little.
Oh,
I'm cool with it. You know that. Turnabout's fair play. I'm all right.
Well, Nightmare, thank you so much for joining us. I hope folks in the audience, if you're listening to this and you're learning.
I have a few phone numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Get them out there.
Yeah.
The EEOC hotline for basically any civilian employees is 1-800-669-4000. 1-800-669-4000. For federal employees, it's 202-663-4599. 202-663-4599. And the ADA hotline is 1-800-514-0301, and that's the voice line. 1-800-514-0301.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Appreciate that. And before we finish up, JJ, if anybody's got questions on this particular subject, they can hit me on my page. They can hit us on the show page. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to put DV Nightmare out there. They can get him on your page, correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Absolutely.
And I'll tell you right now that I message him in the admin chat probably once a week. Hey,
yeah, we
got deployment questions going on in the group. You know, check it out. Go hit that up. You know, that's why I hired him.
This is a tough one to handle on your own, and you got a couple of guys out there that got the experience, and we'll both help you together.
That's right.
The most important thing is just stay calm and stick to your guns. The laws are on your side.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to get through it.
Yeah, it's stressful. Don't blow it. Because that'll send you down the road real quick.
It's a red ass, but it's worth just gritting your teeth and grinding your way through it so that you get the accommodation that you need and you're able to continue to work so that you can live. I mean, really, you need to feed your service dog. If you need to have a job to do that, then you kind of got to suck it up and get through this.
Yep.
Is it fair? Maybe not. Probably not. But it's a step that's necessary in order to continue moving forward with your healing and growth. And that's what we want. That's what we all want. Move forward. Just
one thing real quick. You know, just made a comment about is it fair or not. You know, I didn't look at it as if it was fair. I was asking for something out of the norm.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, if you're asking for something that's not normal everyday occurrence,
true,
you have to expect some resistance.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't disagree. It's not normal. And especially for those of us who may have not be able to be in the workforce or get to a point where we can rejoin the workforce and we're looking, you know, right now, normal for me is needed with me at all times. So I don't realize that to other people, that's weird.
Right.
You know, we get so insular and so stuck inside ourselves, we forget that dog is unusual because he's always there.
Right.
Right.
You know, so.
And one more thing
mm-hmm.
to reiterate something that you said earlier, this is not a cure. And this is, I guess, for the people that are not handlers that happen to be listening.
Mm-hmm.
Just because somebody's got a dog now does not mean that they don't have the same triggers.
Yep.
Doesn't mean that they can just miraculously, you know, perform to your expectations.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing the best they can with what they got.
Yep. And that dog is a tool another tool in that toolbox to try to do the best that they can. Absolutely.
That's it. Thank you.
Appreciate you joining us. Folks, that's it for this week's edition. Next week, we are going to talk to a service dog handler who is also a landlord, and we're going to discuss reasonable accommodations for housing under the Fair Housing Act. That's next Sunday on the Service Dog Show, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on DV Radio, WDVR. See you next week.
DV Radio.